Just so happens we come to Exodus 18, where Moses' father-in-law comes for a visit, bringing back Moses' wife and two kids. It's kind of an interesting family reunion, and we're going to find some lessons that I hope we can use in being good in-laws. One day on Mother's Day, we think that's a very specific, you know, recognition at the church, but my pastor, he said, all of you are either mothers, going to be a mother, or you have a mother. So it applies to everybody. So today you're either an in-law, you're going to be an in-law, or you have in-laws. So it applies to everybody around at one point or another. So let's have a word of prayer and we'll get started with Exodus 18. Father, thank you so much for your goodness and your grace to us. Father, thank you that you do not leave us without resources. But even in the Old Testament, even in an account of Moses, we find lessons that we can use this very week. So I pray that, Father, your Holy Spirit will work interpretation in our heart, that we'll hear, we'll retain, and we'll understand what you have for us today. Thank you for the food. Thank you for all the volunteers that helped us today, and I pray blessings on them in Christ's name. Amen. Google in-law jokes, and you're just covered up. Okay, you've just got all kinds of listings. Two guys in a bar. One of them says, my in-laws are angels. The other guy says, you're lucky, mine are still alive. The possessive father who does not want to give up his daughter in marriage and always wants to kind of hang on to her, very possessive father. So why would a son-in-law rather have a vicious dog than a possessive father-in-law? It's because the dog will eventually let go. And then a golfer hit a long drive that just missed the green by a few inches. His friend says, we call that a son-in-law shot. He goes, really? How come? He said, it's not what you expected, but you have to take it. So there are a lot of jokes, and some of them are kind of embedded in fact, actually. I mean, we hear all the in-law jokes, but when you think about it, two young people, and someone said youth is wasted on the young. I mean, you know, we wish they had the wisdom to look ahead and see what was going to happen. But you're not just marrying a person. You're really uniting two families. You're really getting into, in marriage, you're getting into a relationship with a family that you did not know. You don't know the background. And all of a sudden, because opposites attract, all of a sudden, Christmas and Thanksgiving and various holidays, you're thrown into a situation for which often you're not prepared. And oftentimes that leads to anger and disappointment. So let me just give you some rules for being an in-law. This could be father, mother, daughter, son, anything. And of course, it applies to most relationships as well. First of all is to listen and be sensitive. Our first inclination in any relationship, especially if you're like a father-in-law, mother-in-law, you're looking and observing what's happening in this new family, the first inclination is to fix things. And often it's verbal advice, you know, have you thought about this? Are you going to do this? Have you fixed this yet? And that kind of becomes a drippy faucet. My wife has a good friend, and she said, they were talking about in-laws, and she said, when my mother-in-law, the very first visit ever to our apartment, I mean, I had spent days getting it clean. I knew she was a neat freak, and I had spent days getting it clean, and everything was shined, and everything was polished, and the floors were vacuumed, the beds made, and the dishes clean, and in the shelves. I left the room for 5 minutes. I came back, and she's standing on a chair dusting the top of my ceiling fan. I mean, whoever looks at the top of the blades of a ceiling fan, she didn't have to say a word, but it spoke volumes about what she thought about her new daughter-in-law. Observe, listen, and be sensitive. In verse 1 of this chapter, Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian, heard about everything God had done for Moses. Now, this is before Google, so he did some research, and he asked around, and he said, what's going on? And so he listened, and then he was sensitive, which leads us to the second thing in verse 6, respect the new home. Now, the background is in Exodus 3. The last time we see Moses and his wife together, shortly after the birth of his second son, there's a huge argument that happens that involves a knife and some blood. She says something. I've tried to get into the Hebrew to get something nice out of it. I can't. She says something very derogatory towards Moses. And Zipporah, his wife, exits the account of Exodus, and we don't hear from her for 15 chapters. We don't even know what happened to her. We know she went back to her homeland, went back to daddy. And the interesting thing in verse 6 is Jethro says to Moses, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and two sons. Now, that should have been fairly apparent, right? I mean, you would think he would recognize his wife and two sons, and especially his father-in-law Jethro. But there are about four or five times in this account that we're reminded that Jethro is his father-in-law. I mean, it's like, okay, I got it. I got it here in verse 6, but it's repeated and repeated and repeated, the father-in-law relationship here. Now, let me just give you a little background on my family. I've got a family photo. We all went to Disneyland Disney World this last year. And so you see, on the front left is my wife, Bonnie, and me. Then my older son, Adam, his wife is to the far right, Stephanie. Then Lauren, my other daughter-in-law, is right there in the front. My younger son, they live in Hong Kong, Tyler and Lauren, is there. And then you see the four grandgirls, Sarah, Grace, Charlotte, or Atlanta. They're the top two on the left. The two little blondes with the Mickey Mouse ears are Abby and Ava, and they live in Hong Kong. So I have experience having in-laws. I have experience being an in-law to two daughters-in-law. I don't have the relationship that Jethro had with Moses. So just that kind of confession, but that kind of brings you up to date on my family. I'm not going to use any stories from my family, but let me just tell you, it's all good. I love my wife's parents. They're both deceased now. They were very, very different from my family of origin. Kind of when I first visited her home, everything from style of furniture to, I mean, just what they liked to do. They were good, church-going, God-fearing people. I loved them. Just different. I'm sure I'm different to Lauren, who grew up in Metairie, Louisiana. Her dad is just one of the friendliest guys you've ever known. But they were not Christians. Her mom and dad did not come to the Lord until they were adults. Very different from my family or Bonnie's family. Stephanie's family in Atlanta, it's one of those deals where he is owns a plumbing contractor family. So when he put on the wedding, it was like spare no expense. You know, forget doctors and lawyers. Plumbing contractors are where the real money is, right? And so we had a rented vintage limousine with doves released from. It was over the top. It was great. But it's a different kind. I mean, you're talking about three really different kinds of families just in this picture. Well, five really different kinds of families. And then Bonnie's parents and my parents. I mean, you got a lot of moving parts going on there. And so Moses and Zipporah evidently in Exodus 3 have this huge fight. She leaves. She's out of the picture for 15 chapters. Now, all of a sudden, her dad is bringing her and the two boys back to Moses. Moses is only responsible for about 1 million people at this point, right? All of these slaves, they just fought a big battle. He's got a lot going on in his life. And so this is like the definition of tense. How is this going to work out? Is she going to pull the knife again? Is she going to call him names? You know, is the father going to take up for his daughter? What's going to go on? You have to respect the new home. That is to understand this new relationship. What do we have in Genesis? Leave the father and mother, cleave to the wife, to become one flesh. Jesus actually quotes that in the New Testament. That doesn't make it any more authoritative, but it just means that it was pretty significant that that's one of the Old Testament passages that Jesus quoted. Tim LaHaye calls it the principle of leaving and cleaving. He said there has to be a separation from the family of origin and a transference of loyalty to the new family. In other words, the old thing about I'm leaving to go see my mother, or I'm leaving to go see my father, That's a real thing. But you've got to understand the relationship of leaving and cleaving. One of my former pastors, Tom Eliff, when he married his oldest daughter, Beth, they did the traditional Trinity candle. You know how you do that. Choreographed kind of, got you two lighted candles. She takes hers and blows it out. They light the center candle, the new family. Then she takes, they've gotten it backwards, and it really spoils the imagery when you blow out your candles first. And then you got three unlighted candles. No, they light the center candle, the new home. Then they blow out their two candles. And it is a beautiful thing. There's usually music in the background, and it's a wonderful visual. And it's a wonderful symbol of the two becoming one. But Tom thought he'd have a little fun with his daughter. And when she wanted to borrow his pickup about 3 weeks after the honeymoon, he goes, "Heck no, you blew my candle out. I'm out of this deal, you know. If you want my pickup, you should have kept my candle lighted, you know." No, that's the imagery that we have, though, is there's a transference of love and loyalty. That doesn't mean they don't love you, parents. That doesn't mean they're not loyal to you, parents. But their primary relationship becomes this new nuclear family. Jethro respected that. Zipporah evidently came, brought the boys with her to him. He brought her back. I mean, that's a pretty, now some daughters probably you'd want to bring back, but in this case, I think it's a pretty big statement. Let me just give you kind of a rule of life for father-in-law, mother-in-law. Don't ever encourage loyalty or love to yourself at the expense of the new spouse. And I've seen some really, really horrific things happen. I mean, newlyweds have a hard enough time anyway. But if you're trying to play one of them off against the other for your sake, because you want to show that you're the hero, that's wrong. You need to respect the new home. You need to do everything you can to make it successful. Understand that the divorce rates in America have consistently hovered around 50%. I mean, flip a coin. Is it going to work? Is it not going to work? The new couple needs all the help they can get. And when they are able to run to you and tell all their problems and tell all their stories, and they're in the driver's seat, they say, you know, "I love you. I don't love my husband. I don't love my wife." That's a bad situation. So respect the new home. Number three, on the other hand, love your children. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law. Now, again, this could have been a really tense situation. You know, why didn't you bring her back earlier? Does she have a knife? All kinds of things could have gone on here. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, bowed down, sign of respect, kissed him. That's Mid-Eastern greeting. They ask each other how it had been. This is like two football buddies meeting up over a tailgate, you know. They ask each other how they had been. They went into the tent. That's traditional kind of Middle Eastern hospitality. Love your children. Love your in-laws. I heard about a guy that was so disgusted with his mother-in-law, he got his dog's tail bobbed off because he said, "I don't want there to be any sign of welcome when she comes to visit." I mean, that's sad. Sad. But there is a stereotype of, you know, Zipporah running home to her daddy. Their safety, their security. I can remember as a newlywed, you know, I get into a disagreement about, is the toothpaste going to cut which end, you know, all that kind of stuff. You get into a disagreement the way you should be, I think the devil puts these thoughts in your mind. Mom liked me. Mom liked me just the way I am. Mom didn't want to change me, you know. She made me milk and cookies. I bet I could go back there right now and get milk and cookies and she'd say nice things to me. I don't have to put up with this. And I think the devil puts that kind of stuff in your mind. Love your children. Love them enough to let them go. Love your in-laws. Love them enough to overlook things. We always, in our newlywed classes, told the newlywed couples, be really careful what you share with your parents about your spouse. Because you and your spouse will make up this weekend. Your parents will remember it forever. Be really careful. Just as there ought to be a loyalty, allow the new couple to develop loyalty and love to each other. I'll just go out and say it. father-in-law, mother-in-law, if your biological child starts ratting out, you know, their new spouse, tell them to go to a counselor. I mean, they don't need to fill your mind with that garbage, because all that's going to do is set up an antagonistic and hostile attitude towards you and the person. It's the classic case of taking up someone else's offense. A young newlywed comes home crying and upset. Somebody treated, you know, their spouse treated them mean. They make up, but you harbor that, and three Thanksgivings later, you know, you burn the turkey just to spite the one that hurt your child. I mean, we have to be bigger than that, and Jethro obviously was. Jethro has a hurt daughter, emotionally hurt daughter, coming home. He brings her back and then goes in and fellowships with her husband. That's a pretty powerful symbol, not only to Moses, but also to Zipporah. You know, this is your husband. You need to give him respect. So love your children. Fourthly, celebrate God's blessings together. In verse 9, Jethro rejoiced over all the good things the Lord had done for Israel. As much as possible, when you get family gatherings together, focus on the positive. Howard Hendricks used to say, anybody can find the negative in some situation. Anybody can become a critic of a person or a situation. You can find something to complain about. But as much as possible, focus on the positive. This is one of those classic things. If you don't have something good to say, just don't say anything. Sometimes the kindest thing you can do is just to keep your mouth shut. They're different. They're not like you. That doesn't mean they're bad. Again, opposites attract, and there's a reason your child married that person. A question that you ask, 1 Corinthians 13, the love chapter, it says it'll hardly even notice when others do its wrong. That's love. And will rejoice whenever truth wins out. You have to ask yourself the question, can you really rejoice at their success? Can you really rejoice when your son-in-law is successful, when your daughter-in-law, when your in-laws, as far as that goes, can you rejoice at their success? Can you say, you know, you were right about that. You told me this a long time ago, and you were absolutely right. I'm happy that you're right. Oftentimes, we're pretty sad that they're right. Number 5, worship God together. And perhaps this is the real key. You know, I've used the Christmas tree illustration so many times that the little child's putting ornaments on the Christmas tree, and as they get closer to the star, the little child says, you know, they're getting closer to each other. And I think that's the way it is in human relationships. The closer we are to Jesus Christ, the closer we're going to be to each other. The more we show the fruits of the Spirit, the love and the joy and the peace, the closer we're going to be to each other. The more we understand God's purpose in us, the less we're selfish, the less we demand rights, and the more we take up responsibilities. So worship God together. It says in verse 12, then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, there it is again, brought a burnt offering and sacrifices to the Lord. There's a real value in common beliefs. There's a real value in sharing things together. I was talking to one of our staff earlier this summer, and he was venting a little bit, not venting to his in-laws, he's venting about his in-laws, and he said, you know, I'm a preacher. I've got a little bit of a different schedule, and we were having a family get-together, and her parents are not Christians. They don't go to church, and I had to leave to go do something, and they planned a family reunion over a Sunday 300 miles away that I'm going to have to pay for. And that weekend, I had two weddings scheduled, and I was going to preach at a church. But the rest of the family is all going to be there. So, you know, he was talking about how difficult it was going to be to drive out there and be there on Friday and Saturday and drive back and then drive back and get his family. It's hard not to have a bitterness there. And so I was talking to a guy yesterday at lunch about a common friend, and their son is marrying a girl who is not a Christian. None of her family are Christians. They're actually totally different in their political beliefs. They're totally different She has no religious beliefs. He was at one point, a strong Christian. But they love each other. And they can't see anything beyond that at this point. You know, we're physically attracted. We love each other. We're going to get married. And you just see the storm approaching. You see this clash of cultures. You see at the discomfort at family reunions that are going to happen. On the other hand, this man was talking about his daughter, and he said she was really involved at school. She was in athletics, and she was dating the quarterback. She comes from a strong Baptist heritage. He comes from a strong Catholic heritage, and they got more and more serious. And finally, you know, she had the talk and said, "Look, I'm willing to give on this thing, but I'm not going to become a Catholic. You know, we can go to a community. We don't have to go to a Baptist church. We go to a community church, but I want my children raised up under Bible teaching, and I want my children to hear the plan of salvation. That's just a bridge too far for me." And they broke up. And I looked at the guy and I said, you know, he might have been the star quarterback, but your daughter has really got strong convictions. She's made a hard decision right now that's going to pay off later by not having to make a whole bunch of really other hard decisions. So being able to share values, being able to have those things in common. John Bisogno was pastor at First Baptist Church Houston for 30 years. And, you know, my dad was kind of a mentor to him, but there's kind of a story behind the story with John Bisogno in that his father-in-law was a pastor in California, first of all, and then I think they moved after that. But he talked about, I mean, John Bisogno at 18 years of old was a dance band leader in New Orleans. He was called the youngest dance band leader, jazz leader in America. He came to my dad's church just right after getting saved. They heard he had some musical skills, you know. He came to my dad's church to direct the music. And my dad swears, and I'm not going to try to refute this because it's too good of a story, but my dad swears that John got up with his horn, played a few hot licks, and said, "Come on, you cats, let's hit it with Amazing Grace." I mean, he was really fresh off the turnip truck in terms of Christianity, and he credits his father-in-law. Can you imagine this pastor's beautiful blonde daughter dating the youngest dance band leader in America? I mean, he was a Christian by this point, but only just weeks was he a Christian. Pastor Beck mentored John Bisogno, took him under his wing, didn't criticize him. In many ways, John Bisogno said, "I'm the pastor, I'm the man I am today because a father-in-law loved me, taught me his beliefs, and shared those with me." Worship God together. Number six, this is a long one. Number six, three parts, help resolve problems. Now, the problem is we try to make number six number one. And instead of being sensitive and listening, we try to help resolve problems. I mean, we just kind of walk into this new family and, okay, this is what you need to do. And it is interpreted as criticism. You know, you're a sloppy housekeeper. You're a terrible cook. You don't take care of your car. All these sorts of things. So let me give you a three-step process. Once you've done steps one through five and built the credibility, observe. Verses 13 and 14, the next day Moses sat down to judge the people. They stood around Moses from morning until evening when Moses' father-in-law saw everything he was doing. He first of all looked. Now, it was a train wreck from the very beginning. First shot out of the gun, Moses comes out, sits down in his chair to judge, and literally there's hundreds of people around him. And Jethro knew the answer at that moment, but he kept his mouth shut. Let me repeat that. The very first thing, Jethro had the answer. He knew how to make it easier on Moses, but he sat and observed from morning until evening. Number one, he didn't publicly humiliate his son-in-law. He didn't go drag him out of the chair and say, "Look, this is stupid. You know, you can do this a whole lot better. Let me get this organized for you." He didn't publicly humiliate his son-in-law. He wanted to make sure that it really was going to be this stupid all day long, okay? This was not going to get any better. They weren't going to take a number and stand in line. There's just going to be a mob around Moses all day long. He observed. He observed. Anita Renfro did the internet sensation, Momisms. I don't know. You might remember it's 7 years ago, 2007. It was things about mothers set to the William Tell Overture. Now, if you're not into classical music, it's the Lone Ranger theme, okay? It's all these cute little pithy sayings. And so obviously they came back and said, why don't you do a follow-up to Dad's? And she said it would be pretty boring. The Dad's set to the William Tell Overture would just be three words. Ask your mom, ask your mom, ask your mom. So observe, guys. We want to step in and fix it. Number two, ask questions. Even though at the very beginning, I believe Jethro saw the problem and knew the answer to the problem, he still asked questions. What is this thing you're doing for the people? Why are you sitting alone to judge? It's the old classic Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. So observe, ask questions. And only then do you suggest an alternative. And make sure you've got the right motive. You're not trying to put them in their place. You're not trying to cut them down a notch. Chuck Knoll, the NFL Hall of Fame coach of the Steel Curtain defense at Pittsburgh Steelers, several-time NFL champions, he said, as a coach, your only job is to help your players play better. Now, That's pretty simplistic. Anybody here that coaches, I'm not trying to take away from getting the equipment and getting the Gatorade and calling them, you know, all that kind of stuff. But as a coach, your ultimate goal is to help the players play better. And I would say as an in-law, you want to make it better for them. You don't want to add to the problems that are there. So go into it with a right heart attitude. I want to make this better. And there's three things that you do. Number one, you suggest an alternative that is truly in their best interest. Now, there was one guy I knew that was called Better Idea Bill. And it didn't matter what you did, he always had a better idea. And it was just a pride thing. And it was just a joke that Better Idea Bill's coming, you know. And it doesn't matter even if what you have is working, he's going to suggest something else. Suggest an alternative that's in their best interest. How can this benefit them? This is the young couple. He said in verse 13, you're certainly going to wear yourself out. Make sure that you suggest an alternative that has some long-term benefits. It's not just it's not just a quick fix. It's not just the kid coming to you and you say, ask mom. Or it's not just the young couple and you say, just shut up and shake hands and let's get over this. It's something with some long-term benefits. He was going to recruit leaders that were going to instruct him in the statutes and the laws of God. And then finally, suggest an alternative that will leave the final decision with them and hopefully with God. And that's the hardest thing, is to suggest advice and then see that they don't use it. And just let it go. I'm not going to sing that song. But just leave the final decision to them. If you do this, Jethro, again, he sat there and watched this train wreck all day long. And he's been thinking of how we can get this thing fixed. But he ends up by saying in verse 24, if you do this and God directs, in other words, give them the empowerment to make the decision. If you are a son-in-law or a daughter-in-law, I would suggest three things to you in closing. Maybe not as quite as apparent in the text, but it's certainly here. Number one, when you get married, it's a commitment to love your spouse's parents. We don't think about that a lot. But you're making a commitment that the two are going to become one flesh. So their mom, their dad, they're going to become not just my in-laws, they're going to become my second family. So before you get married, if you're single, make sure you understand what you're getting yourself into. You're joining two families. And a commitment to love your spouse is a commitment to love their parents. I mean, they may gripe about their parents, but they're still their parents. And there's obviously all kinds of nuances there. Secondly, a commitment to marry is a commitment to listen. Someone said, you know, if you're a young married couple or you're thinking about getting married, when you think about advice from your in-laws, remember, they've been your age, but you haven't been their age. There is a perspective of experience. And many times, I mean, I was young once, believe it or not, I didn't want to hear how we used to do it and back in the good old days and all that kind of stuff. But see if you can find that kernel of truth, a commitment to listen. And then finally, marriage is always a commitment to grow. Greg Mott, he said, when Kelly and I got married, we made a commitment that the two would become one. And we spent the first 3 years trying to figure out which one. There's always that I do it this way, you do it this way, tomato, tomato, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, a commitment to marry is a commitment to change. It's a commitment to grow. It's a commitment to become more like Jesus Christ, that I'm going to learn something from this other person and their family that I've not been exposed to in my whole life. USA Today did an article in closing on better photos with camera phones. Everybody's a photographer now. Everybody's got their camera phone. And it's not just selfies. You know, they're taking pictures of all these things. And one of the things kind of struck me as being a good relationship principle. The cameras on camera phones are digital cameras. And so when you use the zoom feature, all you're doing is enlarging the image and cropping out the borders. And so it becomes more blurry. The more you zoom, the more you blur. So the USA Today writer said, zoom with your feet. If you want to get closer, if you want to get a better result, get closer to your subject. And that's a good word for in-laws as well. If you've got resentment in your heart toward in-laws or whichever direction you're talking about, whether you're the father-in-law or they're the father-in-law, if you've got resentment now, try to get into their world and see how they're thinking and what's going on with them and show a real interest in them. There's a natural otherness to in-laws. Try to bring them into an usness and show them Christ's love. Let's pray.